RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
Otago University alumni Dr. Barnett Bond, a former rural medical doctor, has also worked as an anaesthetist and in-flight repatriation doctor. He served on the Medical Council of New Zealand for 6 years. Currently, he works part-time at Auckland City Mission Medical Centre and is the primary care clinical director for adult radiology and Starship Children's Hospital at Auckland Hospital. He runs a GP clinic for parents of sick children at Starship and chairs the Auckland Rheumatic Fever and Rheumatic Heart Disease Group, aiming to reduce rates of cardiac surgery in children. This year, he received a letter from Otago University asking for funding. He went viral for posting his response, criticizing them for being race-obsessed neo-Marxists who waste donor money on meaningless symbolics when that money could have been put towards the next generation of doctors. We had a chat with Dr. Bond early last month about that letter that went viral, and we thought we'd invite him back this morning to get his views on Otago University's statement on free speech and the state of free speech in New Zealand in general, I guess. So, Barnett, nice to have you back. I hope you're well.
I'm very well, Paul, and I hope you're well too.
I am. I'm rugged up. Got the anorak on. So thank you for asking. I'm just wondering, I read out, you know, the details, albeit scant details, of that letter that went viral, like that word. Do you still have those thoughts that you expressed back then about the university?
Have I changed my mind in any way? No, not at all.
Oh, really? Okay. You've just not seen any change, obviously. Simple as that.
The depressing thing, Paul, is that in spite of the number of people who read my letter, you know, my sense is that those who are in positions of power, those who can actually change the direction, those who can invoke reasonable, rational discussion and listen to both sides of the argument are not listening, really. That's my sense.
Is that part of that culture? We don't listen.
I think it's part of the. I think the people who are in the positions of power, they definitely aren't. They listen. They're listening to a single, one-sided narrative, and they're not interested in another side of the narrative. And you know, the issue that I raised in that letter was we already had a perfectly good Maori name for the Otago University.
That's right. Yep.
In my view, there was no need to spend $1.3 million on a brand new, different Maori name for the university when the university is short of funds, it's losing students, it's got international competition, it's falling in rankings in the world, it keeps boasting that it's in the top 1%, but if you look at the international ranking scales on multiple websites, it's down to about 250 or 300th. So I'm not sure which website they're reading. And in the face of all of those things, it's just a waste of money. I mean, whether it's a good thing to do culturally or not is beside the point. Even if it was the right thing to do, it's certainly the wrong time to do it.
And anyone who could get that job for that money, wow, they were knocking it out of the park. That still hasn't been explained. How come it costs so much, I'm thinking?
No, and as I said to you last month, I'm not in IT or advertising, and I don't know, you know, what the cost structure is. But another example from another area I work, which makes me think that the consultancy firms are taking us all for a ride, is a project which was launched by the last Labor government regarding trying to get on top of this dreadful disease, which you know that I'm deeply immersed in trying to get rid of, along with a few hundred other people. This is acute rheumatic fever and rheumatic heart disease. It's a disease that affects almost exclusively, not exclusively, but almost exclusively Polynesians and Maoris. And, you know, it's something that we could spend a lot of money on, but we are, I don't think we are spending money in the right place. And so, you know, I just find it sad, really, that there are areas of health, for example, I'm sure in education and social welfare and, you know, and so forth, where money could be spent wisely. And my sense is it's not, it's being spent to further a particular political agenda, and that's just not good, really.
Well, I have been in advertising, so for the record, and I used to engage with graphic studios a lot for branding purposes for my clients. I was in TV advertising, and one I'm thinking in particular, very successful firm in Auckland, that cost of that rebranding was more than their annual turnover. So there you go.
So, and the question we would ask, you know, those of us who are not in advertising and not in consultancy, is it value for money? Because it seems an eye-watering sum, and it seems to us, for those of us who are starved of funds for doing other things, that we might be able to spend that money better. So, you know, for my example, where I'm at the coalface with acute rheumatic fever, trying to get the rate of misdiagnoses down to zero, you know, if I get it down to 10%, I'll be happy. To see the government have an initiative where they decide to employ a firm of consultants, ThinkSpace is the name of the firm, who then contract with the government to for a sum of $15 million, no, sorry, I must correct that, $12 million, to consult with three communities in New Zealand, Māori, Tongan, and Samoan, and they would be the right communities to consult because they're the communities that have the highest rates of this disease, mostly in their children. And they ran a two-year project. They've published their findings. You can anyone can see them on the ministry's website, Health New Zealand. You know, it used to be called TWO. And I've read it carefully. And although, and I've been to a conference where all of the papers have been presented, and there's no question there is value in it. There's no question in my mind that there is value. But not $12 million worth of value. And no. So the question I have to ask of Te Whara Ora, Health New Zealand, is the same question I asked of Jan Robertson, the Vice Chancellor of Otago, is give us the breakdown. You know, let New Zealanders have a look at the breakdown. Who got paid? How much did they get paid? And let us all decide whether we think that's value for money. And also, would you mind at the same time justifying that amount, that spend, when you know that other parts of those same initiatives are being denied money, they're being declined in their applications. So that's it, really. And do you get an answer for those questions? Answer it.
I hear you. We hear you. Mm. Well, no, we hear you, but no, you won't get an answer to that. That's a very curly one. I don't think we'll ever get that breakdown. Mm. So let's go to the statement from Otago University. They released it on their website on the 10th of July. Otago University approved statement on free speech. Now, it's a bit too long to read here, but essentially it boils down to, I guess, three things. The University of Otago is committed to free speech, they say, allowing the exploration and debate of diverse ideas to promote understanding and progress. The university supports open inquiry without restricting debate based on perceived offensiveness and emphasizes the importance of engaging in critical thought. That's good. And free speech at the university includes responsibilities such as not obstructing others' expression and encouraging respectful, good faith debate. Response to that sort of boil down of the big long statement, which we don't have time to read through right now.
Well, it's a ray of sunlight in an otherwise bleak landscape, isn't it, Paul? I mean, it's a ray of light because there's a slim chance that the tide of opinion intolerance, which has been the output of universities for the last 15 years, will begin to change. And Paul, it's kind of important that it does change because a few years down the track, it's the graduates of universities that wind up in positions of power in society. They become the future staff of the university. They become politicians. They become policymakers in government. They become reporters for news media. They become CEOs of industry. And if all of these people wind up with the same narrow view that society needs to be engineered by them in a certain direction, and they've been taught by their university to be intolerant of alternate views, then in my view, we're all in for a miserable time.
Well, it's a bit too late, isn't it, Barnett? It's, you know, the stable door is wide open. The horse is long gone, isn't it?
Well, as I said to you last month, I'm sort of always guardedly optimistic, even in the face of what appear to be you know, reasons to be not optimistic. I mean, let's have a look at New Zealand's track record and why I'm optimistic. I mean, New Zealand's got some positive form on protecting freedom of speech. Even before Otago University statement release, New Zealand scored a free speech victory, in my view, when the Department of Internal Affairs last year abandoned the proposed online content regulator.
Yep.
And this happened in a world where other countries were very definitely legislating content, online content regulation. Scotland had recently introduced hate speech laws. Canada introduced online speech laws. Australia's e-safety commissioner, Julie Grant, beefed up its online content laws so that she could attack X for not censoring people after she lost a very expensive court case against X. And ditto the European Commissioner Thierry Breton, who had a very public spat with Elon Musk over X's refusal to toe his particular line of censorship. And just last week, the French broadcasting regulator declined to renew the state license for a TV channel called C8. That had a very large viewership because that channel chose to have on one of its shows a couple of people with what we might all agree were extreme views. So the Department of Internal Affairs New Zealand action was praiseworthy, and so was the Otago University's action. Bravo, the University of Otago, for swimming against the current of woke groupthink narratives, because it's a very strong current.
Sounds like you think they might have turned over a new leaf, Barnett.
Well, I'm just saying there's some, it's not the only ray of sunshine on the bleak landscape.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
That's all. I mean, I do predict stormy waters ahead. I mean, given the landscape in which Otago University has written this, I'd have to say writing it down and publishing it as a statement of policy for the university has no doubt made the council of the university feel good. The real proof will come later when they're asked to actually enforce the standard, and I suspect that it will prove to be much harder for the university council and the vice-chancellor to actually do good by enforcing it.
Given the history of universities and what we up till recently understood them to stand for, how do we find ourselves, we can say, because taxpayers have a stake in this, in the situation where the very entities that had really as probably number one priority is to maintain free thinking, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, yet they're the very areas of our contemporary society anyway, which seeks to shut them down. It's kind of crazy.
For sure. And as I said, I think, you know, the tide against which our Department of Internal Affairs and the tide against which Otago University is swimming is a very, very strong tide indeed. But they have, I mean, Professor McLaurin, who I believe was, you know, one of the authors of the statement, or certainly was involved deeply in its writing. I mean, you've quoted a couple of things from it, but let me quote you one part of the statement, which will no doubt upset some people and will surprise some people. And I quote, "The university affirms that it will not restrict debate or deliberation simply because the ideas put forth are thought by some to be offensive, unwise, immoral, or wrong-headed. It is for the members of the university community, its students and its staff, to make those judgments for themselves. The university is not a place for safety from ideas. It is a place to engage in critical thought and debate in the pursuit of knowledge and understanding. Our students will not be prepared for a complex and challenging world unless they've experienced negotiating conflict and disagreement." You know, so I think that's remarkable. The Massey University and the Auckland University statements don't say that. And the only place that I know that does say that, and it's probably done it under duress, is the Cambridge University in the United Kingdom, and probably other universities in the United Kingdom, because, of course, there, as you probably know, last year, through the House of Commons went a new Act of Parliament called the Higher Education Freedom of Speech Act, which strengthened the legal duties which already existed on universities in England to protect, promote, etc., freedom of speech on campuses. But the interesting thing about that piece of legislation, and I think it's obviously reflected in Otago's statement, is that it's very specific. It says that the people who whose views are protected are students, staff, and visiting speakers. Now, we've all seen the phenomenon in New Zealand and overseas of visiting speakers who've had their invited talks cancelled as a result of small numbers of student protesting or social media pile-ons by that group of homo sapiens that I like to call homus perpetually offended. Yeah. I mean, and here's, in 2022, the very talented Auckland educator Paul Crowhurst had his invitation to lecture at Massey University withdrawn because he published an op-ed titled "The Real Prospect of Unpicking Racism." And Massey University's censorious underbelly was very visible 3 years before that when the Vice-Chancellor Jan Thomas caved into protesters and cancelled the proposed talk on campus by a Conservative ex-member of Parliament because, as she said, one Twitter writer threatened to bring a gun to the talk if it went ahead. But in emails to university staff later, she exposed her true reasons for cancelling when she wrote that her concern was what she called, and I quote, "the racist behaviour of the speaker." So once again, we had a tiny, angry, disruptive minority of students and a woke vice-chancellor overriding the will of the majority. And no one was allowed to decide for themselves whether the views of the speaker were racist or whether this was just a mudslinging label used by Jan Thomas to force her personal view on other people. The invitation to the politician was reported to have been made by the Massey University Politics Club, and both the chairman of that club and the president of the New Zealand Union of Students Associations were publicly critical of Jan Thomas, and a newspaper report said they were especially aggrieved that after the incident, Jan Thomas had threatened the Massey University Politics Club with being defunded. This threat was probably because the club didn't toe the line with her particular point of view.
This may be a sensitive question, but I'd like to get your comment on this. I wonder if what we're seeing here is more likely under the management, the female management of these institutions. Because I can kind of understand, you know, kindness, empathy, caring, and wanting to avoid, you know, anyone being offended, students being upset, et cetera. Of course, they're paying to be there. I suppose they're clients. Is there anything in that, do you think?
Well, I don't know, Paul. I mean, I didn't particularly take notice of the Vice-Chancellor's gender.
But
if you look at the social science research about average characteristics of females versus average characteristics of males, you're quite right. The average character, females score higher in all of those social science research studies on those characteristics that you've just mentioned, and males score lower. The problem with generalizing on averages is that you can't then apply that to an individual man or an individual woman, because you don't know where on the spectrum of those characteristics they fall.
No, I know that. Yeah. I'm just wondering, because you could say that vigorous free speech might seem like some sort of toxic masculinity coming across, is really what I was thinking. Who knows? It's dangerous territory.
I don't think about that much. But now I am thinking. I just think about my workplace, Paul. I work in a couple of medical workplaces. Golly gosh, the females there, they are very opinionated, outspoken, firm, and often, might I say, right.
Okay, we don't argue with that. Okay.
No, so I don't know whether medicine's a bit unusual. We've had women in medicine for hundreds of years. They are at least as competent as the males. They are as talented as the males. They bring to the table incredibly useful insights. I don't. In my experience, I don't think that's right.
I'm not trying to corner you in any place, don't worry. It was just occurred to me. And we do know that Victoria University recently postponed a planned debate on freedom of speech after concerns the event could become a platform for hate speech. There's that term. So there's a bit of catch-up to be done. It's interesting that Otago University did this first. Do you think there's any unique driver on them that would make them do that? Maybe it was your viral letter.
I wouldn't think so, Paul, because, you know, these statements are in the planning for months, maybe okay. for years. I would suspect that Professor McLaurin and his colleagues have been they had public meetings. No, they had university open meetings where they invited staff and students to look at drafts over many months.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that. Yep.
So, you know, I when did I write to Jan Robertson? Like 2 or 3 months ago. Now, I suspect this has been in the works for a while. I suspect, you know, if you wanted my, you know, my best guess, and that's all it is, about why Otago University has adopted, you know, this very strongly worded approach to direct the university that it will tolerate a range of views, even if those views are offensive. I'd say it's probably Professor McLaurin and his colleagues, you know, because the university council would contract him, he's professor of philosophy, and others in the university to draft and write this and to go through the process. I'd suspect, to be honest with you, that Otago University, some Otago University Council members probably not happy with it. It's obviously got through council. There's 5 of them, isn't there, or 6? But and the reason I say that is that, well, this is the very same university that a year ago pushed back on a Freedom of Information request by the Otago Daily Times to find out the costs of the unveiled Maori sculpture that had been commissioned and paid for by the university. And it wasn't just that they resisted the request. It was that they stated, and I quote, "Any more inquiries by the public or the press about the object would be culturally insensitive."
Ah, okay.
So this is not quite how New Zealand works, is it, Paul? The bulk of funding to Otago University comes from the taxpayer, so all New Zealanders own that sculpture, and whether it's a Maori sculpture or not, all New Zealand taxpayers, Maori taxpayers and non-Maori taxpayers, have a right to know how much the university spent on it. Using the culturally insensitive argument is a thinly veiled accusation of racism, and it's just censorship by another name. It's quite the opposite of freedom of speech. So in answer to your question, I'd put it down to the team that Professor McLaurin was part of as to why this particular statement is so strongly worded. And the ones that I understand, I haven't read either of them, but I've read critiques of them, that the Massey University and Auckland University do have qualifying clauses about stuff like, well, you have free speech, but it can't offend anybody. So that's my guess, but it's a guess.
Yeah. Nice to have you back on, Barnett Bond, Dr. Bond. It's our second conversation. And boy, you're across the detail. That's impressive. Thanks for coming back on. All the best.
And you enjoy your new studio, Paul.
Nice I certainly talk. Will. Lots of knobs and buttons to push and fiddle with. Yep.
I'm envious. Take care.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.